The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'd like to have the announcements at the end of the sitting today, rather at the talk, rather than the beginning. Because I would like to read a poem that maybe I thought you might listen to it more deeply, or if you listen to it first coming out of the meditation. It's a poem by the Vietnamese monk and Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh. It's a somewhat famous poem of his. It's a number of times I've read it, I've often touched by it. So the poem is called Call Me by My True Names. Do not say that I'll depart tomorrow, because even today I still arrive. Looking deeply, I arrive in every second to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with wings still fragile, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, in order to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that are alive. I am the mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird which, when spring comes, arrives in time to eat the mayfly. I am the frog swimming happily in the clear pond, and I am also the grass snake who, approaching in silence, feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo, with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river of tears, so full it fills the four oceans. Please, call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughs at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. So he wrote that in the 1980s. When the boat people in Vietnam and Uganda were quite a bit in the news. So he's one of the great Western teachers of Buddhism in the world, and he chose to write this poem to talk about, you know, my true names. Nowhere in the poem does he say, call me Thich Nhat Hanh. But he does refer to himself a lot in the poem. He doesn't leave himself out. He just doesn't give himself a name, but rather he sees himself in the name and in the world that he encounters. He uses the language of looking deeply. So here is the practice of mindfulness, to somehow have the ability to have insight or to consider deeply the world we live in, not to look at it on the surface, And the question is, what does it mean to see deeply? What does it mean to look beyond the surface? Or maybe it's only to see it in the surface is to look deeply. Because one of the things that sometimes happens in meditation practice is that we clear the surface for all the dust and debris that prevents us from seeing in a clear way. So all the thoughts and distractions and self-preoccupations we have, all the ways in which we define ourselves and represent ourselves and caught up in self-concepts, tends to calm down as we meditate. It might not go away forever, but it calms down. And then sometimes when you open your eyes at the end of a meditation session, it doesn't make so much sense to have an idea of who you are. It's more like who you are, if anything, is what arises in the field of awareness. What arises in the field of, open your eyes, and what arises in the field of sight. Because that seems clear. That seems kind of alive in the great aliveness of an open awareness. And so here, Thich Nhat Hanh says, I look deeply. And it's always arriving. The idea of always arriving. Each moment is a new arrival. And each moment is something new. And so his ability to look deeply, I believe, speaks to the ability to show up fresh for everything that you encounter. So not carrying with us the baggage of the past, even maybe the feelings of the past, but being somehow able to show up, in Buddhist language, empty, empty of ideas and feelings and situations of the past. And so he arrives in every second. He begins the poem with this beautiful, pastoral, idyllic, romantic, you know, nice thing of a bud on a spring branch. A tiny bird with wings still fragile, learning to sing in my new nest. I mean, it's kind of, you know, sweet and kind of softening us up for what's coming, throwing us off guard. Oh, how nice, nice world we live in. Flowers and birds. I just feel like going skipping in the meadow. And then I arrive in order to laugh and to cry. That sounds nice, laughing. In order to fear and to hope. So I arrive, I show up in order to allow his full humanity of his emotions and feelings. The idea of arriving, allowing, being present for, showing up for. For all of it. For the rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that are alive. The rhythm of his heart. So I guess he's talking about the metaphorical heart. And he finds his heart not in his thoughts, ideas, but rather in the world he encounters, the people that he encounters, all that is born and dies. And then he continues, maybe keeping us off guard, the mayfly metamorphizing on the surface of the river. But then the bird that swoops down arrives in time to eat the mayfly. He set us up for that because early on he talks about the bird, a tiny bird with wings still fragile, learning to sing in its new nest. How nice. You know, this wonderful, sweet, cuddly bird that's going to devour countless insects. Great devastation on the river. Arrived in time to eat the mayfly. I am the frog swimming happily in the clear pond. And I am also the grass snake who, approaching in silence, feeds itself on the frog. I've been with children delighted to see a frog in nature. And I've been with children delighted to see a snake slithering in the grass. But what happens when the two meet? And I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones. I don't know where he wrote this, but he lived from that time, many times, for a long time he lived in France. The sense of being, his way of arriving, looking deeply, is not just the moment, this moment here, but there's also an inclusion of a world, land, that's far from him, land that maybe he only is aware of through the newspaper or the television or back then. And he identifies strongly with his wider world beyond his immediate world. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks, and I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. It's not in a pastoral, only a pastoral world that we live in. And I'm the 12-year-old girl, the refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I've read that, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh in the 1980s went to the Philippines and places like that to try to help the Vietnamese boat people who were leaving a very perilous journey on these boats, leaving Vietnam, trying to come to safety. Some of the boats didn't make it. Some people fell in, jumped in. Pirates got them. And I read that, at least I think I remember I read, that Thich Nhat Hanh said that it was hard for him to encounter, to know these things were happening to his fellow people and be in Philippines to receive and hear the stories, and that he would spend days being angry. He'd go off by himself and practice alone and just kind of work through his anger and his, you know, at what the world was encountering. So, I mean, this is a man who feels or felt very deeply what's going on. So the fact that he writes this poem about being open and being willing to see himself and the world around him, you know, it wasn't like he was just calm and relaxed and open about it. I mean, it had a big impact on him. It's for him to write this. He might very well have been there at the shores of the Philippines when the boat arrived this girl had once been on the boat. And the people off the boat told the story of someone. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river of tears, so full it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughs at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. So this is his wish. This is his intention, his aspiration, is that the door of his compassion stay open. And I think that wasn't something that came automatically to him, but he dedicated himself to practice. This is a man who practiced a lot. I don't know if it's his current lifestyle, but I know many years ago in the 80s when I knew him, that he would spend something like half the year, the winter months, doing retreat on his own, and then the other half of the year out teaching and being out in the world doing all the things he did. So he was dedicated to both meeting the world in a deep way, but also having a practice that kept him open, doors of compassion open. And that was his wish, is to keep the doors of compassion open. And I think it's a beautiful thing that that should be one's wish. Not to have a bigger monastery, not to have better robes, not to have more students, not to have donors of all kinds, not to have many of the things that people outside the monastic world might pursue, but this idea of, you know, may my heart stay open, may the door of compassion remain open. And this clear identification with the world around you. I mean, it's kind of powerful to not refer to your own name as who you are, but to say, my name is those with the world around, who I encounter, who I see. It's kind of an identity, a kind of an intimacy, a strong connection. And then this ability to keep flowing with it, to stay open with it, not to close to any of it, but ready, this idea of always arriving, always showing up, ready to show up for the next thing, ready to show up for the next thing. So in our practice of mindfulness and meditation, we learn to watch and see how our mind can show up and be fresh for the next moment and how it doesn't to do that. And learning and seeing how we don't do that, how we have retroactive thinking, how we get caught up and sidetracked by our thoughts and our feelings, how we get locked in on what's going on, are really important lessons of this meditation practice we do. In fact, sometimes the biggest lessons of this practice that we do are learned the best when you can't do the practice. Isn't that interesting? Rather than thinking that when you can't do the practice, that's unfortunate, when you can't do it, that's where you really, maybe that's where the practice begins. And it's not that you go out and invent not making it work, but you know, take encouragement for the fact that when you have challenge and difficulty to be present, that's where really the practice works, because that's where you bring your attention, your mindfulness. What's going on here? What's happening here? Why is my heart closed? Why is my mind caught? And then to see, is your wish, is it really your wish to stay open? Is it really your wish to be able to show up and arrive fresh for the next moment? And that's not always so obvious, I think, that that's what our hearts, our minds are about and what it really wants. It might be inspiring in a poem to hear that, but if in the details of our own mind and how it actually operates, you know, we might think we want that, but the mind has some other ideas. The mind has all its concerns and fears and desires and sometimes gets locked into. And so one of the, I think, really important aspects for someone who is interested in this practice of Buddhism, of freedom, of keeping the doors of the mind and heart open, is having the desire to do so, having the intention, the aspiration, that this is an important part of life, to do this, to keep open, to keep the compassion, to keep the freedom, to keep the practice going in the forefront. And where does that leave us? Where does that bring us? And I think that this poem by Thich Nhat Hanh is one example of where this showing up deeply, showing up clearly, showing up freshly, where it can lead us. And to me, this kind of poem offers me lots of hope for this world we live in. Rather than despairing by the images that he uses, the stories that he gives here, as tragic and horrible as they are, some of them, they're in the context of a poem, context of a person's practice, that offers a lot of hope for what's possible in this world, that it's possible for each of us to become, in a sense, connected, responsive to the world in all aspects of the world with an open heart, and in so doing, become brothers and sisters to everyone. So doing, become caretakers of each other. So doing, really see and understand deeply who we are. And who we are maybe is not different, distinct from, separate from others in the world around us. Do not say that I'll depart tomorrow, because even today I still arrive. Look deeply. I arrive in every second to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with wings still fragile, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. So what jewels are waiting for you to see? What jewels are waiting for you? In Tibetan Buddhism, they have a famous mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. And the translation of it is the jewel in the lotus. And some people will say that the lotus, as it opens, reveals a jewel. The lotus is the awakened mind, the mind that opens up. And the jewel in it is compassion, compassion for the world. So, that's what I have for today. So now the question for you all is, what's your name? What's your name? You know what your name is? So you're going to find out in a moment now. So if you could just very simply turn to some of the people around you and tell them what your name is. And when you hear each other's names, guess whose name it is? So please, take a few moments. That seemed to be more than a name. Or some of you have very long names, which I think everyone does. Everyone has a very, very, very long name. And in fact, the kind of given name that's usually relatively short is just the tip of the iceberg of who a person is and the history of a person, what the person's gone through in their lives. And I've learned over my adult life, not when I was a child growing up, as an adult, how much is invisible when we see someone and the history of that person, history of their joys and sorrows and background. And you don't really know who you encounter. You don't really know when you simply hear a name what's behind that and who that person is. And I've come to feel tremendous respect and kind of reverence for the depth or the fullness of the people that I encounter, the people who, all of you, everyone. No one should be taken for granted. And so then a name is just a tip of the iceberg. And so tell me my true name. Tell me who you are. Let me really get to know you. Because as I get to know you, I get to know myself.